It's a generally clear radar over the Midwest with some scattered showers in southeastern Kansas, southern Missouri, and, yes, Arkansas again. Areas of Texas is even in on the game this morning. And Quint might be getting some rain in Kentucky. We'll find out on today's Farmer Forum.
Live from the dew-dipped Midwest via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Kent Thiessy from the Minnesota Youth Livestock Expo. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Quinton Pottinger and Mike Appert. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp delivers the scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, how you doing this morning, buddy?
Super good, super peaceful. Let me just give you a snapshot, okay? I'm making my organic oatmeal while sipping my organic tea.
Yes.
And looking out my organic window at my organic neighboring pine tree, right?
Okay.
And the dew was very thick this morning, and I noticed for the first time this summer, there was a hummingbird just ever so gracefully sipping the little beads of dew off of the pine needles. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Just what a lovely, lovely little moment this morning. Yeah.
Got it. Yeah.
I'm off to a good start. How about you? Yeah.
While I was eating my white toast made from commodity hard red wheat.
Yes.
And eating my eggs that were clearly, they tasted so good. So they were clearly from a caged hen.
Oh, sure.
While drinking my Columbia Folgers breakfast blend coffee, I was watching the hummingbirds outside of my window as well.
No kidding.
Yes.
Well, you see, the hummingbirds will unite us all. Now, take me back to that toast. Are we talking margarine or are we talking real butter?
Real butter, baby.
Okay. Right. We can build a base on real butter, okay?
Can and we?
The rest, we can work out the rest later, Chip.
Wow. Let's go ahead and get to the news.
The Congressional Budget Office, or CBO, will release its fiscal forecasts for the United States today. The outlook will show the impacts of the coronavirus pandemic and will lend guidance to government revenue and spending. In July, the CBO forecasts that from 2020 to 2030, annual real GDP would be 3.4% lower than it had projected in January. Forecasts of much higher public debt in the coming years are expected. Meanwhile, Chip, Fed Governor Lael Brainard says the U.S. economy is facing substantial risks, including the premature withdrawal of government spending to support economic growth. Longer-term uncertainties are fueled by permanent layoffs and bankruptcies among certain businesses. Brainard said additional government spending and other related fiscal policies will be a key factor in the nation's recovery from the pandemic.
Yeah.
How you like them apples? Yeah,
I feel like that last part was delivered by Captain Obvious. Really? Additional government spending and other related fiscal policies will be a key factor in the nation's recovery from the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Yes. Yes. Let's not get into where does the money come from? When is enough enough? I don't know.
Money comes from a printing press, Davis.
Oh, well, we're fine then.
Yes.
House Democrats have reached out to Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, urging him to negotiate on the next round of economic assistance related to COVID-19. The Democratic majority of the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Crisis used a hearing Tuesday to press Mnuchin on aid talks. Representative Maxine Waters asked Mnuchin whether he would support Speaker Pelosi's revised bottom line of a $2.2 trillion package. And you might remember that's down from the original $3.4 trillion the House Democrats initially sought. White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows said over the weekend that the White House was prepared to support only $1.3 trillion. So here we are again, apart on the money.
Yeah, and we're about $1 trillion apart between the two sides. And plus, it's just really hard to keep up with Nancy Pelosi right now. I mean, she's got all of her salon visits that she's got scheduled now, I guess. So
I wasn't going to mention that.
I couldn't help it.
Attaboy. Well, China's looming corn shortage is raising concerns over food security in that nation. Food inflation in China has climbed to the highest level in over a decade, and President Xi Jinping has made recent pleas to the people to avoid food waste. A source told Reuters, quote, the shortages would likely be a boon for major exporters like the United States and Ukraine, but threatens to push upward global prices. Now, Chip, an executive with a Chinese state-owned trading firm, get this, who wished to remain anonymous, wonder why, said, quote, yeah. It is certain that there will be a corn shortage in the future, and we would need to import a lot next year, close quote.
You know, we are, I'm into a conversation right now about how much corn China will import in the 2020-21 marketing year. And then you look out to that 21-22 marketing year, and their needs seem to be their ability to remain close to self-sufficient on their corn needs. Mm-hmm. It's slipping away from them in a hurry.
Yep. And finally, violence sparked by the police shooting of a man in Kenosha, Wisconsin, amounted to, quote, domestic terror, President Trump said during a visit to the embattled city, where he called for greater support for law enforcement. Quote, I keep hearing about peaceful protests, and then I come into an area like this, Trump said of his visit, which included stops at a burned-out building and a torched store. Trump announced he'll provide $4 million to businesses and $1 million to local law enforcement agencies and more than $42 million for public safety across the great state of Wisconsin. Chip.
All right, good stuff. Thanks, Davis. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. How you doing, Margie?
Doing well today, Chip. Thanks for asking.
You bet. Okay, hey, so putting on crop nutrients with the planter, it's becoming more and more popular. At least the testing is getting more advanced.
Yeah, I think there's been an even greater focus on how to gain greater efficiencies with that planter pass and the application opportunities there are. So you're spot on. A lot of farmers digging in on what kind of fertility products can go down with the planter to get those crop fertility products closer to that seed. Now we're also seeing even more innovation being done around crop protection products. So one example would be the AMVAC SimPass system. So that's the smart integrated multi-product prescription application system. But SimPass has been around for about 4 years. This past year, AMVAC partnered with 5 ag retailers across the country for even more beta testing of pre-commercial units. And AMVAC also just announced that they've completed a first phase of testing with Corteva AgriScience. So I think this is indicative of future trends to come. Again, seeking greater efficiencies, more application with that planter, and really critically setting up yield potential at the planter pass.
Yeah. And we're not just talking about starter fertilizers here. We're talking about micronutrients. We're talking about very specific crop protective traits.
It is. And one example that AMVAC shares, too, would be with the counter product that targets nematodes. You know, nematodes can be mapped. You know where those high pockets of pressure are. And then the application can be pinpointed and prescriptively done just in those hot spots, which also is a great story about being a steward of crop protection products.
Exactly. It's a fascinating product, a fascinating story, and a fascinating application process. All right. Very cool. Thanks, Margie. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Chip.
Yep, that is Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. We'll be back with more Ag We're Talk in a moment.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
I learned the hard way.
Say, Chip.
Yes, Davis.
We talked about how peaceful our mornings were because of the hummingbirds. You know, sipping the dew, doing their hummingbird stuff. Big Apple Joe brings up a very spooky and disconcerting thought.
Yeah?
He says bats drink from hummingbird feeders at night.
Yeah, sure they do.
I feel like I need a shower now or something. Bats drinking from hummingbird feeders?
Yeah. And you know, the one that I enjoyed this summer was we've got a hummingbird feeder right by our living room window. And it's on a shepherd's hook, and the middle of the night, I hear this tink, 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 tink. Turn the lights off and hit the flashlight out the window, and there's a raccoon looking right back at me.
Oh,
hanging off the hummingbird feeder.
You know, trash pandas I don't mind so much, but the idea of flying rats drinking hummingbird's food.
Bats are cool. Bats
are cool. You're out there in the woods. You know, we have our non-organic means for destroying the mosquito population in here. I'm not all organic. Don't get me wrong here. Okay. I'm no hippie, okay?
Hey, there is some breaking news. Allendale has released their crop estimates. We've got the 2020 national average corn yield estimate, 178.28. That is a crop of 14.98 billion bushels. Soybeans, 51.93. That is a crop of 4.311. So 1498. USDA in August was a 15.278. Yeah. And USDA on August 1 on soybeans was 4.425 billion bushels, and Allendale is 4.311 billion bushels. Okay,
Let's get to it.
Have a conversation right now with Kent Thiessy. He is a promoter, a founder, a leader. I'm not exactly sure what to call you, Kent, of the Minnesota Youth Livestock Expo. Kent, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
Great to be here.
Good, good, good. So it's been a couple of weeks, Kent. Have you recovered from it yet? Because it looked like it was a heck of an event.
Well, I really was. And actually, I've been involved with these youth livestock shows for about 40 years. I've been the coordinator of the State Fair 4-H Beef Show up in Minnesota, and as well as worked with the junior activities at the Minnesota Beef Expo for about 20 years. And what happened this year, of course, the Minnesota State Fair canceled. I think nearly every county fair in Minnesota canceled, just like all over the country, really, Midwest especially. And, you know, and then the Beef Expo canceled. So back in late May, after the State Fair was canceled, several of us got together and decided, hey, let's try and pull together a statewide youth livestock event for 4-H and FFA members, and just worked out. We were able to put that together on the 19th to 23rd of August, and we did it down at Fairmont at the Martin County Fairgrounds, and then over at Jackson at the Jackson County Fairgrounds. We had the hogs over there, and we had the beef, sheep, and goats over in Fairmont, and those two fairgrounds are 25 miles apart right off of Interstate 90, and both fair boards were very cooperative with us, so we were able to get it put together, and we followed all the COVID-19 guidelines, and we're able to pull it off. We had 900 exhibitors and about 1,900 exhibits.
900 exhibitors, Kent. I mean, that's got to be pushing the numbers that you would see at the state fair, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is for those species.
Yeah,
actually, in some of the species, we were comparable to state fair, and a couple like hogs and sheep, we actually have more exhibitors than we would have at state fair. Not necessarily exhibitors. The Minnesota State Fair is kind of unique in 4-H, where each exhibitor can only bring one animal, and at this event, we allowed them to bring multiple animals.
Okay,
so that's how we had 900 exhibitors and 1,900 exhibits. But the show ended up just, and these were all from Minnesota, so. This show just really exploded, and it just showed how anxious 4-H and FFA members and their families were to get out and have a major show event. And it really was successful in all aspects. And we were able to – the other thing, of course, to put a show like that on, you need some resources and dollars, and that went way beyond our expectations, too. We were able to through donations of various businesses and individuals and organizations, able to raise about $200,000 for that show. So not only did we cover our expenses, but we were able to give all the kids some very nice prizes. In fact, every exhibitor got some prize money out of it, even the last place one in every class. So we were really excited to be able to do that. We had showmanship competition and gave out some nice belt buckles and prizes through Sullivan Supply for showmanship. So
yeah, yeah.
It was just a fantastic event.
It sounds like it was a fantastic event. And I mean, this question, it's starting to sound a little silly in my mind now, but was it worth it? I mean, it's a lot of work to put this together.
Well, it really was. And, you know, we had our core committee was about 25 people that actually planned this, but it really got down a management committee of about 10 people that did a lot of the nuts and bolts to put it together. And everybody did that on volunteer time. We had no paid employees. And I think for all of us, it was worth it. Just, if nothing else, to see the smile on all the faces that were at this show. And I know myself and some of the other committee members, I don't think I've ever been told thank you so many times ever in a few days. And it was really neat. And, you know, I guess the only bad part about it being successful is now everybody's asking, well, what about next year? And of course,
right.
Next year may be different.
Yeah, that's the question.
Obviously we hope county fairs and state fairs are back next year, but we got a plan. We're already planning maybe to do something. It probably won't be exactly the same because obviously part of the anomaly this year was that there was no state fair, and this became kind of a statewide event. But I think we can still have
right.
a very successful event next year. Maybe it'll be at the front end of county fairs and state fair instead of at the back end.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask if you were going to be looking at doing it again, because these youth, you know how they are, Kent. And you give them another opportunity to go out and exhibit their projects, they're going to go out and do it.
Well, they are. And it's, I guess I grew up in showing livestock and involved. I spent many years in the Extension Service before I went into ag lending here, but I've kind of stayed involved with these youth livestock activities. And we've just seen so many kids that have grown and developed over the years and went on to successful ag careers. I mean, one of the best examples, one of our 4-H alumni from Minnesota way back that I remember being involved is Steve Senske, who is now Undersecretary of Agriculture. And he started as a 4-H'er in Jackson County, Minnesota. So.
All right. Well, it sounds like perhaps Chip did indeed get knocked off. His signal was starting to flake out on him towards the end there. Is our
yes,
backup host Davis here?
He is. All yes. Right. Yes. Standing by. So Kent, you had a fantastic event. You had a terrific response. If let's say things go back to normal in our world. What does it look like moving ahead for you back if things get back to the way that they used to be?
Well, I think what'll happen is the Minnesota Youth Livestock Expo will probably become more of a preview show. And, you know, the balancing act we have to work through there is trying to, in Minnesota, our county fair season really kicks into full gear in July, not too long after 4th of July. So what we're probably looking at is either a late June or very early July show right after the 4th of July. About that second middle of July is when the county fair season really kicks in Minnesota. And, of course, the Minnesota State Fair is in late August and early September and ends on Labor Day. So, and that's kind of, some exhibitors continue on to shows like Exarban in Kansas City later in the fall. But a lot of 4-H'ers and FFA members kind of shut their projects down for the year after the Minnesota State Fair is over.
And that's one of the great, great iconic state fairs of the summertime in the U.S. I mean, it always has been, yeah?
Yeah, it really is. It's, I think average attendance per day is the largest. And as far as total attendance, it's always in the top two or three with Texas and Ohio. And, we have a great 4-H and FFA youth shows there, especially our 4-H show We had an auction last year, our 4-H auction, where we had about 110 exhibitors in it, and we grossed close to $700,000. So
we've
had a lot
smokes.
Of success.
Yep. And Kent Thiessy from the Minnesota Youth Livestock Expo.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
All right, joining me now, Brian Grady, editor of Pro Farmer. Brian, start us out on the livestock. Feeder cattle down almost $2, live cattle down as well, and I understand there's some softness in the cash market to start out this week.
Yeah, I see what you're doing here. Start with the bad first and finish with the slightly better, huh?
That's right.
Live cattle, feeder cattle markets, both under heavy pressure this morning. You mentioned it there. Cash cattle trade started around the $104 level in the Southern Plains yesterday. So that's down from the previous week by about a dollar. And that's got the futures under pressure this morning. We paused the first 2 days this week, and now we're posting a technical downside breakout. And so that's not good news either. So we got technicals working against them, the bulls, the fundamentals working against the bulls, and it's pretty ugly so far this morning.
Are we correcting in wheat? I'm 7, sometimes 8 cents lower here in the hard wheats.
Yeah, we did see strong gains in the wheat market yesterday, especially in the winter wheat markets. And that was some Chinese buying rumors. We didn't get confirmation of that this morning in the daily export sales. There were no daily export sales announced by USDA. So the market's backing down some today because of that. The corn market, it's favoring the downside as well on the spillover from wheat. And like I said, no daily export sales this morning to support the market. But soybean futures are trading a little bit to the upside here mid-morning, so even without any daily sales announcements, so that's at least a positive.
All right, terrific. Yeah, looks like up around 2.5 cents in most of those soybean contracts. And lean hogs just slightly higher on the day. That's Brian Grady, editor of Pro Farmer on Markets Now. Hey, why don't you sneak over to tryprofarmer.com and see what Pro Farmer has to offer.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize Sanderson Farms for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
I'm back, Davis. I'm back.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
Technology is wonderful.
It really is.
When it works. Otherwise, it's frustration because I wanted to hear from Kent everything about what is going on with that Minnesota Youth Livestock Expo.
Yes, and I got as many words out of him as I absolutely could. And I had to cut the poor guy off, and I feel bad about that. But
no.
You can sense the passion from this guy. And then he got to talking about the Minnesota State Fair and,
fantastic.
All available on the podcast a little later, ladies and gentlemen.
There you go. Thank you,
Big Apple. Way to go.
And my hat's off to everyone that was involved in the Minnesota Youth Livestock Expo. It's a monumental task. You heard him. 900 exhibitors, 1,900 exhibits, 2 locations. They had beef. They had goats. They had swine, sheep, fantastic effort up there, you guys. Way to go. Way to go. Way to put that thing together and get the youth and their projects exhibited. Okay, let's get to the Farmer Forum, which is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement. You can learn all about it by going to agweb.com/ACAM. Mike Appert up in North Dakota. Jeez, Mike, up in North Dakota. How you doing, buddy?
We're all surviving.
Yeah? Tell me about it. What's the growing season been like?
Well, we started out just super wet from last fall. Bunch of snow, combined all winter. A corn harvest that never ended. And ended up with some prevent plant, and then never really caught much rain this summer. We lived on about 5 inches of rain. And so the crops were fair. The corn is really finishing weak. The corn got hurt.
Really?
Yeah, the last 4 or 5 weeks have been really tough on the corn. We just been out of water, and So yeah, the corn's finishing week here.
Okay. All right. What about the soybean crop? How's it? I mean, I would assume if corn is finishing week, beans are too.
You know, surprisingly, the early beans put in early look fabulous. Okay. The later soybeans, I think, are getting caught in this dryness, you know, and getting hurt. But the early beans, the early varieties, maturities that were put in early, they look really good. So mm-hmm. pretty good-looking bean crop, pretty good-looking bean price here with this rally of a dollar this last month.
Yeah.
And so that looks a little optimistic.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Quint Pottinger is down in Kentucky. He joins us right now. Quint, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm doing pretty well. How are you, Chip?
Doing just dandy. Just dandy. You picking up a rain this morning?
Yeah. We picked up a pretty big rain this morning. I was actually just out checking the rain gauge. Finally making it out that way.
But, what'd you get?
It's been consistent. We got a half inch last night, or half inch this morning. We got a half inch Sunday. We've had consistent rain. Every week. It's, you know, I've only been farming, I guess this is my ninth harvest. This is the first year I've actually seen that happen. My dad always said, to make a good crop, you got to have good rain, half inch and inch every week throughout the year. And I've never seen that. I just thought that was something he always said. And I'm seeing it this year. So.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're pretty optimistic. Now, let's go back to the start of the year, though, Quint, because when the year started, you guys down in Kentucky, Tennessee, that area, you were really, really wet, weren't you?
You know, we were, and there was a small window of warm weather at the end of March, beginning of April, that some planting got done.
Okay.
And then it did. It turned off wet and cool. May was cool. We didn't have a lot of growing degree days in May. We luckily hit it right. We had corn, got froze off twice. Luckily, it was the growth point was still underground, so it came back. It didn't finish well, but it still made. We were happy we had those acres done. It wasn't something we had to go back and redo. We had about 100 acres of beans that got froze off, and we had to replant about 45 of those. But the other ones, just from being in the ground early and taking advantage of the water and the sunshine, they look like they're going to be pretty good. I mean, genetics have come a long way.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I mean, and you look at the distance between you and Mike, and the genetic improvement on both corn and soybeans that has happened over the last 5-6 years to create the genetics that will work in your specific areas has been absolutely just phenomenal to watch. Mike, when did you finish up harvesting corn?
Well, it was about the end of June. We cleaned up the last of the corn about the end of June, maybe early July, actually, now that I think about it, some field edges and stuff. So actually, it was July. So we actually combined 12 months straight. Combines never did get shut off, which is a real unusual situation. I don't think it's going to happen again because, you know, this growing season, we've had a lot of heat. You know, a lot of heat units were more back to normal, a little above normal even maybe. And so maturity is moving right along on these crops. So if we don't get any early snowstorms or something goofy like that, we'll be fine.
Right, right. So that corn that was harvested the end of June, early July, what did you do with it, with the ground?
Well, that's where the prevent plant was. You know, it was too wet to get into. We couldn't even get into it till the end of June, you know, and so that's why it never got seeded.
Right. Right. Gotcha. All right. Quint, what else can you tell us about this growing season that it just sounds to me like the consistent rain is what you're going to remember the most from this year.
Yeah, it is. And we've had quite a bit of disease blow in. We've had to treat from it, but it's been an odd year. The heat in July this year was absolutely insane. I mean, it's been hot in the past, but the humidity, when you know our dew points almost matching our daytime temperatures, tracking for about 3 weeks, and that just set up for horrid disease. But we had cool nights. We had nights under 80 degrees pretty consistently, so it allowed that crop to breathe. Now, if you go further west, it's not the same story. We just happen to be in a good pocket this year, and I don't know if it's just 2020, and I don't try to mention anything that could go wrong because it is 2020. And so when I heard him say snowstorm, I'm like, plug my ears, because that could happen in Kentucky in October, you know.
No, I'm not listening. I hear you. So, Quint, was that heat in July, was that your biggest challenge of the growing season this year?
No, I would say it was the second. I mean, you hit on it early on, getting the crop in the ground without getting too much sidewall compaction. We're seeing a lot of the sidewall compaction come through from that, where we had the heat in July, where we just, the root development wasn't there. So, it was definitely part of the challenge.
Gotcha. Mike, up your way. What was the biggest challenge this year? Or have we seen it yet?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. You know, we struggled getting the crop off and getting it in. That was probably the worst of it. And so far, so good since then. But we'll see. Hopefully harvest goes well.
All right. So, Quint, what's the general attitude down in your area among farmers? How are they handling things?
You know, I'm happy you asked that question, because it's really odd. Since April, my wife and I both were on a lot of volunteer boards for farming, and we travel around. We're busy sometimes during planting and harvest season. And this year, with everything either not happening or going virtual, we've looked around and said, man, we've got a lot of free time on our hands. And at the beginning, it was great. There were some things that we needed to, you know, maybe get done, some things on the farm that we maybe have been neglecting. And we've got all caught up, and now we're just twiddling our thumbs. But the crazy thing is I told Leah, nothing has really changed much in our lifestyle. You know, we didn't go out and eat a lot every night. We did a lot of stuff at home. We had our own garden every year. So aside from being able to network with our peers and to be able to interact with them face to face, not much has changed this year. And it's allowed us to really refocus in on the operation and tweak some things to make it more efficient.
Interesting. Mike, I know that you're real active with the soybean growers up in North Dakota. How are you guys handling things up there?
Well, pretty good. You know, I think the ag economy is doing okay. I think if you talk to the livestock people, they're getting hurt the worst. It seems like the livestock industries are getting hurt. You know, the crop farmers are hanging in there. And this recent rally in corn and beans has really been kind of a nice little surprise. It was a little depressing a month ago. A lot better today.
You go back to August 10th, and it was looking pretty dire. Then the big wind blows in, and everybody kind of said, hey, maybe we've got a problem out there. And like you said, Mike, you put a buck on beans, and we've put, what, 40, 45 cents on corn?
Yeah, and so it really helps, and kind of a surprise. I hope China keeps buying, and hopefully we can keep these markets alive.
Yeah, that's I'm glad that you went to that point. And I was talking about it with Davis at the start of the show, that we're working on the story, trying to figure out just what this Chinese corn demand looks like going forward. And yeah, August 10th was a big windstorm in Iowa over a limited number of acres. And for those that were impacted, it sucks. It's bad. I mean, it's really bad. But you guys, look at what China has done since that happened. And you nailed it, Mike. That storm happened. The drought in Iowa intensified. And it's almost like China decided, hey, you know what? There might be a bigger problem over there than what we think. We better just step up and get things bought and get things in the bin, so that we've got what we need later. Okay, we've got a farmer forum going. We've got Mike Appert from North Dakota, Quint Pottinger from Kentucky. When we come back, I want to know what their outlook is. What's the outlook for the end of the year and into 2021? We're going to get that next right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Yeah, big thank you to America's Conservation Ag Movement for sponsoring the Farmer Forum. Appreciate that very much. Hey, Mike Appert, North Dakota, Quint Pottinger, Kentucky. Mike, I had a couple of messages during the break. People want to know what the stage of your corn and soybean. I mean, if you would get some moisture right now, would it help corn? Would it help soybeans?
Well, the early beans are senescing already. They're dropping leaves, so they're just about done. And, you know, the corn, there's the corn's still trying to stay alive. Some of it just gave up. The cobs dropped, you know, and it's kind of game over for that stuff. But, no, any rain would be welcome, but it is getting kind of late. You got to realize we freeze normally here about September 19th. Yeah. Oddly enough, I have heard some chatter now about a possible freeze like September 8th or 9th.
Yeah.
Some weather guy. That would be interesting for these grain markets, and that would
bring back our
crop up here. That would bring us back here if we froze next week. Yep.
Yeah, when you get into September and you start seeing these 90% odds of below normal temperatures in key production areas, you start wondering, okay, could that come along with a frost? No doubt about it. Quint, are you the rains that you're getting, you're still getting a benefit from them.
Oh, for sure. our early beans have started to defoliate, and we started chilling corn last week. But the stuff that was planted in middle May, it's still rocking right now.
Yeah, yeah, very good. So, Quint, are you growing tired of the campaign commercials yet, or are you still into it?
You know, I don't watch a lot of TV, but the radio ads have gotten creative this year, and so I'm not quite tired of them yet. I'm trying to figure out what's going to be next. You know, we've got this Senator McConnell and Amy McGrath runoff this fall, and it's just been wild to listen to how they kind of go at each other. Which we didn't have our big Kentucky Farm Bureau ham breakfast where we get to hear from both sides in front of the audience because the state fair went all mostly just for the livestock shows. So I'm getting it through the radio now. I'm not quite tired of it yet, but I'm sure by the end of the month I will be.
So the issues, when you look at the Biden campaign and you look at the ag platform, does anything stand out to you?
Well, you know, I was at a soybean meeting about 3 weeks ago, and right during the meeting, they announced that the biodiesel industry had a huge win in the Biden energy kind of rollout of his policy. And I thought, okay, that's interesting, because I know rural America, the policies as a whole are very much more, we're more conservative as a whole, but also Trump's policies have helped move us along, and his actions on China have really helped recapture some of the other markets in the region, which is good. It hurts right now. But I was curious to see if we continue to see the battering on the Trump side of the renewable fuels industry, will that shift some minds or change some minds in farmers to go toward more of a renewable fuels friendly candidate? Of course, they haven't really talked about it much. And I know he's latched a lot of it onto the Green New Deal, which has a lot of detrimental factors to it for farmers. But I was curious to see how that would play out in farmers' minds.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Mike, I've been arguing that if President Trump wants the support from the middle of the country like he got in 2016, he probably had better settle this issue of the gap year waivers and before the election takes place, and the sooner the better.
Yeah, the small refinery exemptions have been an issue with that administration, there's no doubt. I know the biodiesel tax thing got passed. That's the best deal biodiesel's ever had.
Yeah.
So that was helpful. That's been helpful for the biodiesel. But yeah, the small refinery exemptions have been troublesome for the ethanol industry. There's no doubt. You know, we've got an industry that just produces too much ethanol, and we don't use that much domestically, especially since COVID-19 came in. So we need exports, or we need something to help us. I mean, I don't know what the answer is going to be, but with energy cheap, you know, I see energy's cheaper again today. When crude oil and heating oil and gas stay cheap, it's just hard to compete as a refined fuel in the marketplace. It really is, and so I'm not sure what's going to happen there.
Yeah, yeah. When I checked earlier, crude oil was off about $1 a barrel, so it's the market is softening up. Mike, what's your level of optimism for the year ahead?
Well, I'm optimistic. This recent grain rally has really healed up some stuff. It looks good. You know, I mean, we've got an average crop or so, and I'm optimistic. I think it looks good. I think China needs the grain. They're gonna go along with their phase one commitments, I think, the way it looks. And as long as they keep buying, I think we're gonna be just fine.
Okay. What about you, Quint? Are you optimistic for your operation and for agriculture in your area?
I am. I think for the next decade, it looks promising. I'm not a geopolitical strategist by any means, and I can't talk with much depth on it, but I think COVID-19 has really rattled some of the developing grain-producing markets in South America. And regardless of whether or not we make a deal with China, it looks like we're getting more countries to sign on to these bilateral deals, which was one of the big things we were questioning if this administration could do, which is going to be good for ag. So I'm optimistic for 2021. I also think that farmers should continue to look at end user markets to sell into. I think you can always capture more dollars that way.
Yeah. The comments that Mike was making about developing those markets for ethanol, spot on, dude. I just feel like that's going to be an opportunity for us in the year ahead, Mike, is more and more of these biofuel demand is going to be showing up from around the world. I'm optimistic on that front as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I hope China comes in. I was hoping China would come in and buy ethanol, you know. But I just think the crude oil complex is so cheap that ethanol really can't compete right now. So okay, That'll have to change, you know.
Yeah, no doubt. You get, hey, one last question. This one just came in, Mike. The question is, when do you think you're going to start corn harvest?
I would say October 10th.
Okay, there you go. There you go. Guys, well done. Thank you so much. Mike Appert up in North Dakota. We'll talk to you again soon, buddy.
Thanks.
All right. And Quint Pottinger down in Kentucky. Quint, it was good to talk with you. Good to catch up. Get out there and stay active, okay, bud?
All right. We'll do.
All right. Hey, guys, thanks so much for listening today. Really appreciate it. Like I started at the bottom of the hour, I guess, at the start of the second segment with the Allendale crop estimates. Well, we've got Rich Nelson. Rich Nelson is going to come on this afternoon. We'll talk about the estimates. We'll talk about where these markets are going right here on AgriTalk.